Welcome to the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution. Listen to interviews with the most influential people in the insurance industry. Learn the most important strategies, tactics, trends, and challenges facing today's independent insurance agents and brokers. New episodes every Wednesday. Visit agencyrevolution.com and click media to explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers. Subscribe today and get updates delivered right to your inbox. And now, without further delay, the Connected Insurance Podcast.
Hey, 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 everybody. Michael Jantz, co-founder of Agency Revolution, formerly lots of things at Agency Revolution. Now, just happy to be your happy podcast host and want to invite you to enjoy this Connected Insurance Podcast presented by Agency Revolution, creators of Fuse, the insurance marketing software that will skyrocket your retention, boost your policy per customer count, and make your clients love your agency. You know, sometimes I think I'm reading that and worried my audience is zoning out. So I want to share something super quick with you. From time to time, I'll hop on the Agency Revolution Slack channel where people can collaborate with each other. And this morning I noticed this. Real results from a real agency. I will allow them to remain unnamed, but I'm sure they're delighted with these numbers, and you'll probably be shocked if you know your way through email marketing. This was a small email blast, I think presumably to a week's or a month's worth of clients who were eligible for their annual risk review. So it only went to 207. It got delivered to 98.6%, bounce rate of 0.5%, opened by 68.1% of the customers who received it. And then this is amazing. Not only did 68% open the email, virtually 25% of everybody who got it, 50 people, clicked through on the email following the call to action. You gotta, if you're a marketer, you drool when you see numbers like that. So if you haven't had a demo, folks, it is time, and it's probably overdue. I mean, when is the best time to grow your agency? Tomorrow? Why don't we get started now? My guest today is terrific, insightful, agency owner, so he knows your pain. He's also the creator of software that is enhancing team performance in agencies. Seth Priest, his work has been featured on Forbes.com. And to some extent, you know, the conversation really revolves less around how can I get my team to perform and more around how can I get my team to want to perform? And that's the magic. So we cover things like common mistakes agency owners make when they try to build a high performance team, and how you can tap into the kind of that magical intrinsic motivator, set of intrinsic motivators that everybody has built inside of them. And some kind of there's some really interesting statistics on how extrinsic motivators can backfire when they're wrongly applied. And then we cover at least three really high leverage, really low cost habits that you can install in your agency for an almost instant boost to agency-wide performance. So I know you care about your team and team performance. This is one that you'll want to listen to. Before I bring you into the conversation, I will remind you of two things very important. When you're in front of your computer next time, what are you going to be thinking of? Oh, gosh, if I haven't done it yet, I need to connect with Michael Jantz on LinkedIn and Agency Revolution on LinkedIn. Boom. That's it. Delighted now to introduce you to Seth Priest, the creator of Leaderboard Legends, agency owner, thought leader, and expert on team performance and team productivity. Enjoy. Seth, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you, Michael?
Well, I'm doing great. Thank you very much. Excited about this topic. In part, as you know, we have a little bit of history with it, with some of our own technology or technologies that one of my companies developed from years ago, and it was fun. But before we dive into the kind of the principles and the forces of gamification, what people are saying about it, and how you think that it is positively and can positively affect production in an insurance agency. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your story and how you got here.
Sure. So I started my sales career actually at about the age of 19, selling Curry vacuum cleaners.
I knew that about you from your bio, and I wanted to say congratulations. I honestly think there's no better training for sales and marketing than like maybe being that young person and knocking on doors. I sold dry cleaning certificates.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. So
and
it was good. I was good. So I've often discovered that over the years when I hired salespeople and they had that, or even anybody to work on the team, and they had those early days of knocking on doors, there was some magic there. If they could survive that, it was pretty amazing. And I think that you learn really, really quickly because the level of rejection is, you know, really high. And the feedback is so instantaneous, like, oh, you can modify your script from, you know, one door to the next. So you get a lot of practice.
And it's so fundamental. I mean, it's the very basics of sales. And so much of what I learned, frankly, at 19 has served me well through the rest of my career.
Seth, can you see any time where gamification is misused or where it's a risk in a business setting?
Absolutely. In fact, this is one of my passions, is that I see this misused so often, and it can be downright counterproductive.
Mm-hmm.
I can say that if you're conducting gamification or running competitions, et cetera, on the same metrics with the same group of people, you're going to get the same result.
Okay.
And so, you know, it's like me running a race against Usain Bolt. You know, how many times do I have to run before I don't try anything?
So the damage is that in those situations, the persistent losers lose motivation.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And it's like proactive loss of motivation.
Okay. Because there is some power behind all the principles that you just talked about in gamification.
Absolutely.
So if it's misused, got it.
Yeah.
All right.
And so when they're put into a competition with somebody that they know is superior to them in performance, they become totally demotivated. They can already foresee the results of the competition, and they don't want to participate. And so if you don't handle it carefully,
mm-hmm.
you can actually risk disengaging a significant portion of the people that you're trying to motivate.
So how do you do that if somebody uses, let's say, you know, your tool, and it's the same team day in, day out? How do you keep it from being demotivating to the people who probably need the most motivation?
Absolutely, yeah. So there's several ways that you could do that. One is that we grade competitions. You can have a competition based on several metrics at one time. So you could, for instance, say that you're having a competition for P&C production, but it's not just premium. It's both premiums and policies.
Okay.
And so if you have somebody who is able to write, you know, larger premium policies for whatever reason, they're suddenly put at a disadvantage against those that write smaller premium but greater policy production.
Right. Okay.
The other thing that we can do is that we can include leading indicator activities so that if you've got new reps that maybe don't have the closing ratios as the experienced reps, they can still gain notoriety while building their skills if we build a competition that's based upon setting appointments or conducting appointments or running quotes. But my favorite way is that you can create teams. And so there's several ways you can do this. One is that you take all your A players and you have them compete against other A players for the best prizes.
Okay.
And then you have your B players versus B players, et cetera, because even when you get to your C players, and they all know who they are,
right?
But they know who the other C players are as well. And when they're put in a competition together, they know that they can beat other C players. And so the objective is to try to get everybody in the organization to do just a little bit better, not just your top producers. Another great way of using this is that you can take experienced reps and pair them with a brand new rep on a team. This, oftentimes your experienced reps aren't particularly interested in sharing their secrets with the new guys. And so by aligning their interests on a team, you can create mentoring relationships. Yeah.
Okay.
Encourage information sharing, et cetera. So those are a couple ways that you can protect yourself from the drawbacks of running the same things over and over.
I need to ask a question that I think is timely for, you know, the modern age that we're in that more and more of the probably the people who would be part of this system, you know, that would participate in this are, well, not all the baby boomer generation. So we're seeing, you know, two or three generations in one agency performing similar tasks. Is there anything that we need to be aware of in regards to gamification vis-a-vis different generations?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think that in general, you're probably going to have an extremely enthusiastic response to gamification by younger people, especially
now,
millennials.
Is that because they're younger or because they've been playing so many games? I mean, you know, gamification is an industry, right? I mean, gaming is an industry,
yeah.
And I know enough about it to know that a lot of the principles that you've talked about, measurable improvement, team participation, those are built into the most successful games.
That's absolutely right.
So,
that certainly plays a very big role because it's familiar territory to them.
Okay, so the world becomes my big video game.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
So have you seen that millennials are they particularly responsive to?
Yeah,
okay,
they are, but I think it's even for a more fundamental reason, and that is that I don't buy into the idea that the millennials are fundamentally that much different
mm-hmm.
than any generation before. I think that they're a product of the time that they were raised in, which was heavily influenced by technology,
right,
especially
right.
social media. And they are accustomed to getting feedback, instantaneous feedback, all day. And they crave that feedback. It doesn't even need to necessarily be positive. They just always want to know. And so when you have a gamification platform that's giving regular updates on where people stand, they relate very well to that. That's what they crave, is that real-time information on
mm-hmm.
how am I doing right now. And so it works particularly well for that reason for your millennials.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not going to necessarily, and I'll be completely honest, there's going to be a certain group that is not going to relate well to it. If you have reps that have established, you know, a way to run their business, for instance, without doing a lot of work, they're super thrilled.
Yeah, okay.
You know,
right.
So,
right.
You know, I'm not going to dance around that. I mean, there's
mm-hmm.
there's realities here.
Right.
But you know, one of the biggest things to think about, I think it's millennials will be the largest portion of the workforce within just the next few years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, on balance, you're going to have a pretty substantial number that will respond well to it. And if we want to attract young people to the insurance industry, this is the sort of thing that will help quite a bit with that effort.
Attractive technology does make a difference there. So if you've got, you know, let's say you have a team with enough people to have your, you know, clearly delineated A players, B players, and C players. So you got your top performers, your middle performers, and your, you know, bottom rung performers. Do you have data that indicates which group this has the most impact on?
No, that's an excellent question. And I don't, I have hunches about it. But I do not have actual data, so I won't pretend.
I'm not even going to ask your hunch. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Well, it's like,
well, I'm curious. What would you think?
Well, you know, there's always kind of you know, there's an axiom in sales management to, you know, feed the eagles and starve the turkeys, right? Because I do think that there is a tendency to think, well, this group is doing so well, they don't need my mentoring, my coaching, my attention,
yeah.
which is usually completely wrong. They tend to respond quite well to it. And then, you know, so we often tend to like over invest in those areas where we get the least return. So that's was kind of my curiosity. And then, you know, look, it's an axiom. It's not a law. It's not always that way. Sometimes the lower performers, you know, they just need some insight or some discipline that they didn't have before. But we're often looking at that middle level, wondering, you know, is this a bee who's moving up, or is this a bee who's stuck?
Exactly. Yeah, I often break sales organizations into four tiers, and I think this is pretty accurate. At your top tier, and the percentages will vary between mm-hmm. companies, but your top tier, you've got your stars. And these are the people that are just hitting it out of the park. They're not complaining about the market. They're getting it done no matter what, and often need little supervision in terms of their motivation. Underneath them, you have your strivers, and these are people who are wanting to become stars. They're doing everything that they can. They're paying attention to the business, you know, developing their skills. Underneath uh-huh. them, you have your strugglers, and oftentimes strugglers were formerly stars or strivers, but have fallen on hard times and are definitely headed in the wrong direction.
Oh, so those are the bees that are moving down.
Down.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
And then at the bottom, you've got your slugs. And these, I don't mean that to be disparaging, but these are people that are at that point in their career have decided that they don't care. They've checked out, and they have no interest in doing anything differently. So that bottom group you can't help. There's no point in trying.
It's
beyond hope.
If I can just pause for a sure. moment, and then we'll circle back. So do we often discover that, through the use of good gamification, like your platform, that we're going to discover those slugs down at the bottom, they're never hitting the basic activity numbers?
Yeah, that's true. And it's interesting because you would think that people just kind of know who's doing what,
yeah.
But we often find when people use our tools, both the gamification and our regular productivity tool, that they're shocked at the little activity that is performed by certain people in the office,
right.
by certain reps.
Okay.
So it can be illuminating.
All of us who've managed sales teams have have had that response or that reaction.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
got it. All right. So the what you're calling your level four slug, they're probably on their way out.
They're on their way out.
Okay. But your strugglers and your strivers, we're moving them up.
Yeah. These you can work with, and it's very interesting because I'm very open minded on the question that you just asked about where you're going to get your biggest lift, because I think it can depend upon the culture of the organization. Like right now, we're engaged with two very, very different companies, two different industries. One of them, they have the problem where they just heap praise and recognition and rewards on their top performers and ignore everyone else. And so if you're not in the top 20%, you get no attention whatsoever, and there's mm-hmm. a great deal of bitterness mm-hmm. among the reps that are not in that top 20%.
Mm-hmm.
I have another company, different industry, where it's exactly the opposite, where you have the top performers who are completely ignored and are never given any appreciation or recognition or perks whatsoever for higher performance. And so, I am more accustomed to the first of those
right.
paradigms,
uh-huh.
But I've realized that the other exists as well, and I think it comes down to a matter of the culture of the organization.
Well, I guess the theory in those organizations is those guys don't need me. So my job is to go train more eagles and let them go fly.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. And so the nice thing about gamification, though, is that you can, regardless of what your circumstances are, on which paradigm you're operating under, I mean, if you're top of not being appreciated enough, they're definitely going to get that recognition through a gamification platform. In the same way that if implemented properly, you're going to get your strivers and your strugglers engaged. I'll give you an example. We're running a pilot right now with a very large company in the financial services industry where they had a particular rep who averaged about 50 outbound calls per day. Uh-huh. Once they started using our platform, that climbed to 250 calls per day.
Uh-huh.
And when asked about it, she responded by saying, "I like to have my name in lights."
Okay.
So it's interesting how it can work, but the great thing is you if you implement it properly, you put it out there and you just kind of watch the magic happen.
So now you've presumably got some data on results.
Yeah.
What are you discovering? What kind of data proves the value of gamification in a sales or service environment?
Yeah. So we just got results from a pilot that we're running currently with a fairly significant number of users, And as they're running competitions solely based on activity generation, mm-hmm. so they're not even looking at sales. To date, their goal was a 5% increase in activity production. To date, they are at 22%.
Wow. Okay.
So it's quite significant.
Yeah, those are numbers that must put a smile on your face.
Yeah,
all right. So, Seth, you have been you've been in the insurance industry for 16 years. You got your own agency. You've been in the sales industry for well over 20 years, including vacuum cleaners. And you're at the same time you're a CEO of an insurtech, and you've got a technology background. When you look at the industry now, and you see a variety of changes, a number of which we've talked about here, right? The rise of the millennial generation, and the influx of new technologies and so on and so forth. If you were going to deliver a message, a non-commercial like message, that ideally would stick in agent's heart or mind, what message do you want to deliver to the agent community?
So, I spent a lot of time thinking about this issue. I was contacted recently by a nonprofit that was aiming to get more young people into the insurance industry. So this has been a problem because the insurance industry, it's a wonderful industry. But for some reason, this message isn't getting out to young people. And I believe that a big part of that problem, this is going to sound kind of squishy, but I think it's applicable, is that your young people today are very concerned about feeling like they have a sense of purpose in the work that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was ever an industry that should be able to show people that we have a wonderful purpose, it's the insurance industry. I mean, we're able to protect people from financial ruin at some of the lowest points of their life.
Right.
And I don't know that this is being communicated well enough to young people today because we tend to talk far too much about policies and premium. Imagine what you'd tell your mother if you were to brag about your work. Would you rather tell her that you generated $40,000 in new P&C commissions that month, or would you be more proud to say that you protected $15 million in assets so families can rest at night?
Right, right.
And so
that somebody's home burned down and you help them rebuild the next one.
Exactly.
Right.
This is very worthwhile work that we do. It has an extreme purpose, but that is not being communicated to young people. And I also think, too, that as you pointed out earlier very astutely, young people are attracted to technology, and the insurance industry is not known for being on the cutting edge of technology. They tend to be risk-averse, and that risk aversion carries over to every aspect of running the business. They definitely need to take that to heart when you're trying to attract the younger generation.
Yeah, though Seth, you'd probably agree that that this industry's appetite for technology is 10x of what it was a decade ago.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, right.
Absolutely.
Right. And the principals need to embrace technologies. I want to ask you one almost final question. And this is one that I frequently ask my InsurTech guests when they're, the agent-friendly InsurTech guests who care about the insurance agent today. I'm trying to help people navigate through a difficult time and a difficult decision. The challenge or the problem is that there are a lot of emerging technologies. I could interview InsurTech CEOs like Monday through Friday and still not get done.
Right.
So there are a lot of new technologies, and to some extent, it's baffling and bewildering to an agency principal to know which ones and how do I know, et cetera, right? Is it because they have the most aggressive sales rep? What is it that properly motivates a purchasing decision? So, my question for you is, what criteria would you suggest, or what buying process would you suggest? Two ways to approach that question. to an agency principal who wants to be intelligent and mature about the quote unquote embrace technology, theme and message. But wants to do it, rationally, doesn't want to make trial and error, expensive and stupid decisions about, technologies, which, they can be. You can install a technology that nobody uses, and it actually can be quite disruptive, and you can lose months of time. So, what criteria do you think they should consider, or what process should they use to help make technology decisions?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I mean, one of the things that I think is very important is that you don't want to have a situation where you have only top executives who are removed from the day-to-day, making technology decisions about software that will be used by people on the front lines. Mm-hmm. If you're buying software for that will be used by the agency force or sub-producers within the agency force, make sure that you are incorporating them in that buying process.
Makes sense.
With them in the buying process, then you should also be able to hear the technology provider speak your language. So they should have a very good understanding of the challenges that you face each and every day.
Mm-hmm.
When you have, especially with the insurance industry, there's a tendency because our industry is so large, it's an attractive market for tech companies from outside the industry to try to enter. And they often don't have an accurate idea of what our industry actually entails, especially mm-hmm. when it comes to the independent side of the equation.
Right.
And so you want to be careful that they're speaking your language and can genuinely demonstrate expertise for our industry.
Got it. Anything else?
No, I think that's...
Okay, that's... All right. If our listeners, and I'm sure some will, want to learn more about your platforms, in particular, we're really talking about Leaderboard here, but you've got more than one. If they want to reach out to, they want to find out more, they want to learn more, how do they do that?
Yeah, I think, easiest way for them would be to visit our website, which is at www.myvation.com.
Let's spell that.
It's M-I, V as in Victor. A, T as in Tom, I, O, N as in Nancy.
Got it. All right. And if they, so visit your website is the best way for them to learn more, gain more knowledge. And I know that you're speaking, you speak within the industry, so not unlikely. I think you're speaking at an ACT event with Ron Berg shortly. So
that's correct.
Not unlikely that somebody's going to run into you in the field. But
yes, that's true.
They can find you 24 hours a day online. How about that? All righty.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Well, this has been a pleasure. I do appreciate spending time with you. I appreciate you sharing your insights. So on behalf of our listeners, thank you so much for sharing today.
Thank you very much for having me. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
You bet.
Thank you for listening to the Connected Insurance Podcast. If you found this episode informative, please share it with your peers and colleagues. Explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers by visiting agencyrevolution.com and clicking Media. Subscribe and get updates delivered right to your inbox. New episodes every Wednesday.